Welcome to RCGP Scotland Presents, Generally Speaking. In this, the seventh episode of the podcast, RCGP Scotland Chair, Dr. Chris Provan, and Chair of RCGP Scotland's Patient Forum, Professor Sonia Aitken, discuss the College's manifesto for the 2026 Scottish Parliament election.
Hello, welcome to Generally Speaking. It's great to be here today with Sonia Aitken, who's our leader in the Patient Forum. So, Sonia, can I ask you to really just introduce yourself and say a bit about yourself, if you can, please?
Yes, thank you. And thank you very much for the invitation today, Chris. So, yes, my name's Sonia, and I'm immensely proud to be, first of all, CEO of a national charity, Pain Association Scotland, helping people with chronic pain and giving them the tools to help them lead a better quality of life. So as part of this work, I do sit on a number of boards and committees campaigning for improvement in services, improved business models to better streamline services, and also visiting professor for healthcare management and public health with the University of York St John in London. So I guess you could say there's lots of input overall into helping improve patient outcomes. And my role as chair of the RCGP Patient Forum is extremely important to ensure that that patient voice is heard. They are the ones at the end of the day who are accessing services, many with varying experiences, and it's from these that we need to learn from. And, you know, if anything's going to change to ensure that improvements are to be made moving forward. So just a brief background there.
No, that's great. And that's very relevant. I mean, chronic pain is something I see in my day job very commonly. It's a complex issue for patients and very relevant. So obviously you have a background in these types of issues. And that helps us look at the manifesto and gives us a different perspective, really, around the manifesto. We talked about, just touched on patients, because that's really, really important. That's what my job is about. It's about helping people, my patients. And it's going to be a really important issue, I think, in the upcoming Scottish elections. And it's really something that we need to think about how we provide patients with a good service in general practice. We've had a great conversation with the Patient Forum in developing our manifesto. I really appreciate the focus and the different perspective you've given us, Sonia, around that. We're really lucky to have a good Patient Forum, very active, and we've had conversations with you about continuity of care and other things which have been very useful. So can I just expand on that? Because it's important to hear the patient voice. Sonia, why is the manifesto important to patients, do you think?
I think, Chris, it's very clear from some of our discussions at recent meetings that this manifesto is important to patients because it forms the basis of a clear statement of values, intentions and commitments. And I think it recognises and redefines the call to action for change. You know, we need to focus the attention on unmet needs, on systemic problems and inequalities. And the manifesto as well, you know, it helps to provide a sense of accountability, of hope and of clear direction. Particularly for those living with chronic or life-limiting conditions. I think there was a stark realisation for the patients when we came to read the manifesto. And, you know, I think concerns were raised that we have at least 222 fewer whole-time equivalent GPs in Scotland than we did in 2013. And that was something that resonated with our forum. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I've been around long enough to see the numbers of people who access our charity alone and for help with a chronic pain and to say that, you know, they can't access a GP when they need them for help. And furthermore, there are many who don't always understand the condition or how it impacts the quality of life. So take that forward and, you know, look at the impact of those unable to work because of all this. You know, there's huge impact on the economy as well. So I think if anything, if we're to move forward with this manifesto and make a difference, which is impactful, along with a system that's fit for the future, we very much need to address the importance of sustainable funding and partnership working.
We want to take the best of general practice into the future. We recently published the value of the general practitioner, whole person medical care, which you can hear another podcast about previous in our series. And that really showed the economic, the personal, society benefits of investing in general practice, which you touched on there. It was one of the members of the forum who pointed out having more GPs would obviously improve access, improve continuity of care, because patients benefit huge amount. The evidence is huge around that, and they don't want to tell the story again. So one of the obviously main points is looking at increasing the workforce, and that's what we're calling for and trying to work together on. What manifesto ask really particularly resonated? Would any of them in particular resonate with you, Sonia?
Yes, but before I answer that, I think that there's a couple of things I want to touch on, if that's okay with you.
Sure, absolutely.
I think it's quite interesting when you read the manifesto for 2021, and it mentions that the 2021 Scottish parliamentary elections come at a critical time for health and social care as we continue to tackle the biggest health crisis that the NHS has ever faced. Now, compare that to the 2026 manifesto,
where we have
the opening to a paragraph on the first page stating that general practice is in perpetual crisis, where a chronic lack of investment in general practice means that the workforce cannot be expanded as necessary. So I kind of have some probably questions to throw back here, which I think is good for today's discussion.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and it's in general, Chris. This is not targeted at you in any way, but it's a general observation, you know, that we as a forum have looked at. So I think the first thing is, why does not only nothing change here, but why is it deemed acceptable? You know, why are we still having the same ask in a 2026 manifesto? You know, our health at the end of the day is critical, not only to leading a quality of life, but as a basic human right. And, you know, again, we need to ensure that we have people that can work in order to ensure a growing economy. So therefore, we need policies to be able to reflect that. So I think my next observation as well is that 5 years ago, we were pleading for 15-minute appointments. And at the end of the day, you know, we've now got a society that's fundamentally living with many long-term conditions. And it's impossible, as you well know, Chris, within a limited time frame, to link or correlate the impact of one symptom on other conditions. And we must also take cognizance of the fact that being able to deliver longer appointments could help towards addressing the other priority of prevention. So I think for the Scottish Government to have this prevention as part of their priority, then again, we need it to be adequately funded. The point, and to now probably answer your question, which resonated me the most, was to make preventative care a priority across all parts of the system. And again, we discussed at our patient forum earlier in the month about the disparity here around the Scottish Government's vision of moving patient care out of hospital into the community. And without adequate investment into both primary care and also third sector, community care, then this is simply not possible. I think strategies and priorities are great, but without adequate funding, we end up with systems that are meaningless. And if we look at prevention, we need to move from a more reactive style of medicine and care to a more preventative one, from a diseased focus to one of self-care, self-management, and less reliance on medical models unnecessarily, because we know that these are not always the best for those managing long-term conditions. But for this to happen, it requires the correct partnership working. So asking which bits of the manifesto resonated with me the most, the one that mattered most to the forum, and that's the most important here, was around continuity of care. It continues to be high on the agenda of patients in terms of better health outcomes, improved management of their long-term conditions, earlier diagnosis, that trust and support as well, which is absolute key. And also, you know, helping facilitate that shared decision making and ultimately not having to retell your story. So whilst it's maybe not, you know, an item specific, we know reading through the manifesto that it features quite highly within that. So, you know, we're very confident in that. And I think it's important to mention that continuity of care is not just a matter of patient preference here, but it's a proven driver of better health outcomes, of better system efficiency and patient trust as well. So strengthening continuity should remain a core priority for primary care policy and practice.
You've summarised a lot of really important themes there, Sonia, and just continuity of care improves mortality, reduces admissions, improves patient satisfaction, trust, improves patients' take-up of preventative medicine. The evidence is really massive around these types of things. And that's one of the important themes that we want to take forward, which was interestingly highlighted in your patient forum. I mean, you come back to the fact that why hasn't this changed since our previous manifesto? I wrote down the words that one of your colleagues from the patient forum said at the time. He said, words sound good, but haven't taken action, was basically what he said. And that's exactly right, because policy documents say that you need more investment in primary care. But if you look at the King's Fund and other bodies, they say that general practice has been systematically ignored for a long time.
Yeah.
But we want to put ourselves forward as the solution. You know, investing in us makes economic, medical sense for the patients that we're trying to help, because it improves the economy. People, as you say, get back to work, and it improves the quality of patients' lives when they have somebody that they trust working with them throughout their complicated illness. And most patients now, there's an increasing amount of complexity where patients have more than one condition, and that needs a GP to work through that with them and go with their own particular choices in their situation, patient-centered care. So we talk a lot about this, but it's time to really think about how we're going to deliver this. We also look at other countries and across the world that are looking at these same types of issues. In Denmark, they're thinking about, for example, having a ratio of 1,000 patients per GP, and Sweden and other countries are thinking about this because they recognise the value of the general practitioner. And, you know, and the whole primary care acting as a shield to help secondary care, so that we don't get everything leaking through into secondary care over time. And if we're going to shift things into the community, we need more investment. You know, investment has gone down from 11% to less than 7% of the entire budget. And that is really being counterproductive, and we need to reverse that. Again, just focusing on prevention, that was one of the themes that came out that patients were really interested in that struck me from discussing the situation with the patient forum. How we do prevent things, because unless we do that, the demand is really overwhelming for the whole system and for patients' general health. We need to work on lifestyle, smoking, alcohol. We need to have a coherent plan across housing, employment. I work in a practice where there's really significant inequalities, and I've seen that worsen over time. And you can see the pressure. And unless we focus on those areas of need, then it's literally going to cost people their lives. And the statistics back that up. We're calling for looking where the actual demand is in the system and what's called an enhanced service to focus funding around that so that patients across the system can have 15-minute appointments, so you actually have the time to go through things, which allows you to be able to sort out problems rather than firefighting all the time, which is what I find really on the ground there.
You know, just to tie in with that, from what you were saying around that prevention, that we do absolutely need that investment in the public health messaging, because I think for too long now, again, we've had this disparity, you know, between trying to manage and fund long-term conditions with short-term investment, and it doesn't work. And, yep. You know, unless people are educated and helped to have that understanding, particularly, you know, in areas where there's a lot of inequalities, unless they're helped to do that, you know, to have that not necessarily better but different lifestyle that will ultimately help them down the line, unless they have that education, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. So we definitely need that investment in the public health messaging.
Yeah, the public health messaging and the environment that we are exposed to through the media, and working to actually improve that around diet. You mentioned link workers, who are important to take advantage of the huge resources in the third sector, and those allow patients to be taken care of in their communities for many conditions, including, for example, mental health conditions. And there's many, many third sectors who organisations that do a huge amount of work around there. So we need to think about the whole pathway and investing in the right areas of that. And one of the things that struck me as well is that, so I think some of your the patient forum members were surprised that 90% of care takes care in the community. And it really is the majority of care, and it's something I take for granted, but again, we need to get that across so that we're investing in that. We need to support GPs and their teams so that they can actually help the patients, because there's a danger that GPs burn out, and that doesn't help, because then patients suffer because there's less of us.
I think, you know, ultimately, the discussions that we've had, so you've touched there about, you know, GP burnout, and I think this is what raises the importance of partnership working. And, right. You know, you mentioned about community link workers and about the third sector, and quite rightly, yes, they need to be adequately funded, which, again, there's a lot of disparity around that just now. But I think also, you know, in order to have that effective collaboration, they need to be seen more at the start of that patient's journey. So when the patient has, you know, the initial interaction with their condition with the GP, that there is already a discussion around proper patient pathways and an exit strategy. Rather than right at the very end, that when you think you've kind of probably maxed out the options, the medical options to the patient, rather than at the end then bring in, you know, the third sector or the community link workers to say, well, there's nothing else we can do for you, but have you thought of you know, that's not really helping the patient to be engaged with treatment they're on. So I think that's a key thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to actually be able to link into social prescribing and medicalizing at times, but not over medicalizing and getting that balance right. And so that we have good communications. One of the things that really frustrates me in my day job is around the infrastructure around these things, around IT and being able to communicate with the hospital and the patient record and electronic prescribing, which many GPs talk about. So we need to improve the infrastructure around that so that we can have a joined up system as well. It's about infrastructure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you were to ask what we as patients value most from our GP, it's about having somebody there when you need them, that understands your need and condition, and that helps you find and navigate solutions. But to do this, as you quite rightly said, Chris, you know, you need the time. So, you know, I would say let GPs do what they're trained to do. And, you know, if you take the statistic around, you know, them spending 18% of the time on administration and bureaucracy, which doesn't add value or improve patient care on the front line, again, why have we not already looked at systems to move this away from the GPs? You know, and one of the members of the forum put it quite rightly, you know, you wouldn't expect a pilot to serve refreshments whilst trying to ensure our safety in a plane. So why do we expect GPs to be doing that? And, you know, they had an absolute point there. So we need to look at, you know, what administration is necessary and what is purely pointless bureaucracy that's not adding value.
Absolutely. And I really liked the airline pilot analogy. And I'm going to steal that for future conversations because it's good around the practicalities and patient safety. So when I'm literally at the practice at 7:30, 8:00 in the evening doing my paperwork, I think about these issues. And there's a big hidden workload in there, which you're quite rightly saying that we're highlighting and calling on the government to look at these so that we can free GPs up to be able to help patients face-to-face as much as possible. Did reading the manifesto change any of your perspectives?
For me, it actually helped to highlight that there needs to be a significant call to action to ensure that any of these, you know, changes are going to be meaningful. You know, we don't want to be looking back in future years at the 2026 manifesto and said, well, that was great, but nothing changed. And, you know, I think to have a vision or a framework to deliver more care in the community, we need that longer term funding. We need that longer term investment to ensure that this effective implementation of longer term policies and initiatives. So this really is a call to action, and it really did highlight what has resulted in kind of a not only a lack of investment, but also, you know, incorrect modelling. And a lot of the times, you know, people burying their head in the sand. We have a problem and it needs fixed.
Absolutely agree. And, you know, there is people use the word crisis, but there is really a crisis in the situation here, in the sense if we don't reverse this trend of investment, we're going to lose primary care, and that means that the system would be flooded with that. I think there is, fortunately, talking to people, there's a political consensus that difficult decisions need to be made. But we need to actually see them made, and everybody backing general practice around the funding and the workforce, because otherwise the GP workforce practices will dwindle, and that patients will find it even more difficult to get an appointment, because GPs in the background are working really hard at the moment to try and provide appointments, but it's really difficult with the lack of recruitment and retention and investment. We always keep coming back to this, you know, come back to the fact that we want to be the solution and work with people to actually sort this out, because ultimately we want to be able to see our patients and help them. I've worked in my practice for 30 years and I enjoy knowing the people I help and their background. One of the feedback I'm getting from the document is that people like the kind of format with the clear asks, really around funding and workforce health inequalities and prevention, which are everything that we've mentioned there. I would encourage people to have a look at it, because we really need to put this forward to the public. Think about how we explain and work together so you can see your GP and we can actually keep the system going in the long term, support patients and GPs to support patients.
This is why this discussion has been so important today, you know, to represent the voice of the patient, you know, for people to have an understanding of what matters to them and the importance of GPs in our lives at the end of the day. And, you know, just one last message, it really is a call to action for change. And now is the absolute time for this to be happening. And, we, you know, it can't be put off any longer. So I would say to, you know, all future prospective governments, we need that change now, and we need it to be sustainable.
Thank you, Sonia. I'm going to end with that because I couldn't say it better myself. And thank you very much for being the patient's voice today. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Generally Speaking, the RCGP Scotland podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with all of the work and news from across the college.